Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Healthy Explosion Show, your best source for holistic health and wellness, with host, board-certified nutrition and wellness practitioner, Martina DeGoot, and co-host, Kimberly Britt. Together with expert guests, they bring you the very best in holistic health and wellness. Your comments and feedback are important to us. To speak to the host, call 914-338-0741. That's 914-338-0741. Now here is Martina DeGoot.
Good afternoon, or good morning, depending on what part of the continent you're on. My name is Martina DeGoot, and welcome to another episode of the Healthy Explosion Show, coming to you from London, UK, as well as the US. My co-host Kimberly and our special guest, Michelle of High Run Against Diabetes. They're actually in the U.S., and I'm here in rainy London today. Hello, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good. Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. I said I'm good. Hello.
Okay. Awesome. And I'm great. And Kimberly, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
Well, that's awesome. We've a very interesting show for you today. We're going to be talking about mind-body exercises and the deeper benefits of getting physical. And Michelle has really proven that with her dedication over the last, especially last 3 years, on really improving her health by becoming physically fit, and actually have turned it into a cause in terms of fighting diabetes. So we're going to hear quite a bit from her today regarding not just how to go about getting physically fit, but also, you know, just a little some tips and so forth that she's going to share with us. And you'll have an opportunity also to hear a little bit more about I Run Against Diabetes and maybe participate in this virtual run. Run, walk, or jog, it doesn't matter what your preference, as long as you do something, that's all it takes. Just want to share with you that the contents of our show is not intended as advice for your regular medical care, so please consult your physician or healthcare provider before making any changes, and definitely, or even changing your exercise routine. You always want to consult your physician ahead of time. Kimberly.
Hi.
I know you weren't here last week, and
I wasn't.
We missed you. And since I'm here on the other side of the continent right now, I'm going to just have you jump in and start with, just introducing Michelle, and then let's get into our topic and get some really good information going here.
Sure. I'm really excited about today's show because it's kind of an up-and-coming field, this whole idea around mind-body exercises. I think the traditional medical community is now placing a lot more emphasis on how things like yoga and meditation and therapeutic massage, all these different kinds of mind-body exercises and therapies, they're actually, we're finding, increasing the benefits of even traditional drug therapy. They're used in conjunction with other therapies. Mind-body exercises, according to the Cleveland Clinic, have been proven to decrease anxiety, decrease pain, enhance sleep, reduce hospital stay time and reduce recovery time. The list just goes on into what kind of a mind-body exercise can help with. And it doesn't have to be something gentle like yoga or walking. It can also be something a little more strenuous like running, which is exactly what Michelle Black, our guest today, is experienced in, Michelle actually was able to transform her own life and her own physical state through running. She lost a lot of weight, and she was able to increase kind of her biomarkers of health in terms of preventing diabetes and all these other things that are just remarkable. But I think when you hear Michelle talk, one of the greatest benefits she's gotten from running is just this greater awareness about her body and the things that her body is capable of. And I would love to hear from you, Michelle, on kind of these greater benefits that you've experienced, not greater in terms of, you know, better or worse, just greater in terms of like an elevated sense of your mind-body connection with running. Like, how do you feel running has affected your emotional and mental state?
With running, you're able to pay attention to your body. And if you take running outdoors, is a way to take in the environment. So there's so many things that I've noticed that I do differently now that I start running. For instance, there's a lot of things that I hadn't noticed that's in the neighborhood that is there. I pay attention to trees, the type of trees, grass and so forth. And then when I'm running and I don't have any music or anything, I listen to my breathing, my footsteps and so forth. So you're more in tune with your body when I started running. And just paying attention to depending on the types of food I eat. So, for instance, if I eat something that's more of a meat base before I run, I notice I'm working harder as opposed to if I eat more of a vegetable-based diet. So there's so much that you have to do to be able to run and feel comfortable with it. And so if you really want to run, it makes you want to do all the other components of fitness and definitely pay attention to your diet. So everything comes into play.
That's a great point. I love how you touch upon how running has been a way for you to actually get outdoors and kind of be more aware of not only your body but your environment. And a lot of studies have actually proven people that exercise outdoors or spend any time outdoors, such as like gardening, for example, they tend to be happier. You're not just getting vitamin D. You're getting a sense of calm that comes from being in nature. And I think that's a really primal instinct that we have in all of us. Just getting outdoors and being one with your environment can reduce stress in and of itself. And then if you add exercise to that, like you're doing, I mean, the benefits are endless. So, Michelle, in terms of stress, has running been a stress reliever for you? Like, have you found if you have a long day, you just really can't wait to get home and get a run in as a way to kind of release?
Well, it definitely, I'm more of a morning runner, so when I don't run, my day is not as good as I do. It's like the endorphins that you release, because sometimes you may not feel like running. Not every time you go to run, you feel happy about it, you know. So sometimes it is strenuous. It's just, you know, your body on certain days. But after you finish, regardless of it was easy or hard or whatever, you just have that feeling of accomplishment, and then you're able to start your day. So it helps to wake me up. It helps to put me in a better mood. I would definitely say it's a mood regulator.
That's so important what you said about mood. Yeah, because exercise has been proven to release endorphins in your brain, which if our listeners don't know, endorphins are, you know, what make your brain feel happy. They can also, unfortunately, be released when we eat something really sugary or something that's kind of bad for us. Your brain will start to release endorphins. That's one of the reasons bad foods are so addictive. But if you can get that positive release from exercise, I mean, that's a win-win situation, like you're feeling, I think.
Yeah, that's so true. And Michelle, you brought a really good point. You said listening to your body, you can tell the difference when you have meat versus vegetable base. Elaborate on that a little bit more, because I think sometimes people think that they need to have, you know, a lot of protein, usually meat-based, in order to be able to endure running. So can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, and everybody's body's different, I don't digest red meat easily. So if I try to run the morning after having, let's say, a steak, not that I would have a steak dinner, but something that was a red meat type of thing, I would feel heavy. and bloated. Mm. And everybody's body's different. So if I have something more like a salmon or a salad, I do a lot better because my body can digest that and use it as fuel readily. So it's a experiment that each individual will have to do to know how their body processes different food intakes. For some people, soy causes inflammation. So it all depends, and you have to pay attention to, you know, take time putting things and taking things out of your diet to see how your body reacts to it, to see where your optimum level of digestion food is, and using it as a source for energy.
So true, so true.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the show, we were talking about the difference just from one continent to the other. I'm actually here in London, and one of the things that was pleasantly surprising is how much people, even though the weather can be really, you know, unpredictable, but people, you find people running all over the place, and it was refreshing. Whereas you do see some of that, especially where we are in the Atlanta area, but not at the level or intensity that you do here. And we were talking that, number one, also the portions are a lot smaller than they are there, which makes a big difference. And also people are more active. You don't have the school bus picking up kids. So they're you know, walking and then taking public transportation to school. And, you know, you see even people who are not in school, but you see people with the backpack, and they're walking, and then they're also, that you see them jogging or even running. So, and, you know, we've been all over London, and it is such a difference. I'm really amazed at just how conscious people seem to be about fitness on a whole, whether they're doing it for health or just a way of lifestyle, which it's really, you know, really beneficial. So you have to look. It's like you have to look to find people who are actually overweight versus the reverse in, say, and I'm talking about Atlanta area right now, where you have to look to see people who are physically fit. And when I say physically fit, I mean people who appear to be within their normal range and not the intensity of the obesity. I'm not saying they don't have obesity here, but the you know, the percentage is so much lower. The largest area where they have a concentration, it's not a very large area here in the southeast London, and the current stats, it's 26%. So it fluctuates, I guess, maybe across, even they're saying across the UK, where it's more like 18%. And, of course, you know, they're concerned about the rise in obesity. But just looking at around at people, no matter where you go, people are relatively streamlined here, which is really very interesting. And it's from a nutrition standpoint, it's refreshing to see that. And even you see a lot more vegetable stands. You know, you're in the middle of the city, like in central London, and you are able to buy fruits from the stand, and you find a lot more homegrown fruits and vegetables. And, of course, I found Whole Foods, which is all over London, which is actually like being in, you know, heaven. And also, you know, so it's good. I really like that. I'm impressed with that. But yeah, you see, you know, no matter how small the children, they're, you know, they have the little backpack, and they're outside. They're walking. They're being physically fit. So, and I know Michelle and also Kimberly, you've both been to London, so you can relate to that. But it would be good to have some of that kind of rub off on the U.S. It would help to reduce,
well,
you know, the problems that we're having.
But, okay, so, but that depends on where you are in the U.S., because if you go up north where you have an extended public transportation system, you will see people walking, running, bikes, and so forth. In the South,
mm-hmm.
they have yet to develop such a intricate system, so most people drive. And then you're in traffic, and then what they go get fast food. And then the Southern cooking is mostly sugary, fried, and so forth. So you put all those together, and that's where you get the obesity. So the fact that we have to drive our cars in the South, it contributes to the fact that we have the obesity rate, and not also the Southern food contributes to the fact that we have the obesity in the Southern, as opposed to as much in the, you won't find it if the rate's as high as if you went to New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, because they're walking. They're taking public transportation, they're biking, you know, they're in the parks and everything, but everything's easier to get to, so a lot of that contributes to it, too.
Yeah, because I saw something else of bicycle stands.
Oh, where you can rent bikes?
Yeah, a lot of bike people.
Yeah, that's people awesome. Riding.
Yeah.
I noticed, really, too, when I lived in Ireland, it was 2008. I was lucky enough to live in Ireland for a little over half a year, and I noticed when I did my grocery shopping, at first we seemed kind of inconvenienced by this, but then I later kind of learned to understand that it was beneficial, that you couldn't buy as many foods in bulk. You can't, they didn't have like the Costco's and, you know, not to call out any specific stores, I think they do have their place and you can save money, but you couldn't buy, it was impossible to buy the quantities of food at the low prices that we have in the States. You would just kind of go to the stands and buy what you needed for that night, and you kind of had to think about what you were going to cook, and you bought what was fresh and what was maybe in season, because that's only what was available. It wasn't, you know, being shipped from all over the world. It was kind of what you could find down the street from your local farmer. Well, that's what you were going to find in your grocery store and in slightly limited quantities. So I think the whole process kind of sets you up for success over there as compared to some of the cities we have in the U.S.
Yeah, that's true. They do have a Costco here now, by the way.
They do? No way. That's
they have Costco.
Must be new.
Yeah, they have Costco, and, yeah, you can go inside the large quantities. They have quite a few of the stores that you find there. But, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Costco because, yeah, actually passed by Costco earlier today. So, yeah, they do have Costco here.
That's shocking.
They also have a Costco in Jamaica. It's not the same name, but it's the same concept.
Oh, that's awesome. But also, another thing is, too, when you look at the flats, they don't have, a lot of the flats don't have the space and refrigerator. Everything is made because, you know, you don't have extended land space where you can just build new types of homes. So you find the same type of homes. Maybe they refurb, you know, and update, but still it's very compact. So you look in a home or, you know, they call them a flat, and the refrigerators are smaller. So you're right. You go and you buy, and you're very conscious of the fact that you don't have a lot of storage.
Right.
So you're more, and they try to keep, from a couple of people I've spoken to, they want to keep their food fresh. So they'll buy every couple of days to make sure that they don't have stale food, which is also very interesting. You would think maybe it's, say it costs more money, but a lot of people, they have these things that they pull and jump on the bus, and some of them they're just walking or even riding, and then they're carrying the food. You see them going to the store and they're coming back, or they're even walking with the groceries in their hand. And I'm talking about whatever the area you find that. So it's really interesting. Michelle, share with us, you know, there are people that want to start becoming more healthy through fitness, and, you know, they keep putting it off. And I keep talking about Atlanta because that's one of the South is one of the areas where we have such a high concentration of people who are obese. But, for instance, and you're right, we do drive quite a bit because it's more spread out, and sometimes the areas that you need to get to, you really need to drive. So what would you say, Michelle, to someone that, you know, they work all day in the office, and about at the end of the day, they're exhausted, and the drive home in the traffic, because, you know, like with any major city, traffic can be an issue, especially if you're commuting. So they get home, they prepare the meals, and then they're too tired or they're just, you know, emotionally drained, don't want to really walk. How would you encourage someone, and what would you say to them?
Well, with that type of schedule, the only way that you're going to get to fit in exercise, especially if you have a family, it's preparation. So you have to plan your meals for the week. So if you're going to cook, you have to cut up or whatever you have to do so that you can easily prepare your meals. And then also for the individual, it prevents them from snacking on unhealthy food. So you top up your vegetables, you have your nuts, you have your smoothies and so forth. So definitely preparation. If we can at least get them with the, you know, getting the whole, well, I have to cook for my family and so forth out of the way, then that will help them. But then I've also noticed, as I explain to people, that walking, jogging, swimming, whatever you're doing, does not have to be exercise. It can actually be fun. It could be a social outlet. They tend to grab hold of that more readily than the concept of exercise. People just don't like the concept of exercise unless you're one of those people that really love exercise. But majority of people, especially when you're trying to get in shape first, they don't like that concept of exercise. So, for instance, this past Thursday, I was at one of our run clubs, and the lady, she lives not far from my house, which is, you know, we're talking and so forth. She's from Jamaica as well. And it was the first time running with the group, and I asked her how she liked it. And I was like, well, I use it for not just, you know, exercise. I use it as a social gathering. I said, you know, next time you come, try and meet a couple people so that you can not just run in a group, but, you know, run with someone in the group. And, you know, if the time that you came today is not appropriate, then you can schedule to go with them and walk, run, or whatever you want to do at that time. Because a lot of times we have crazy schedules, but if you have someone that you're committed to meet, then you're more likely to do that exercise or whatever that activity. Another thing I explained to them, I use it as a means of traveling. And she was like, really? So that was like, you know, and a lot of people I've seen have grabbed hold to running because they like the fact that, you know, you travel from state to state, you meet other people and so forth. So the social aspect, again, which contributes to the mood altering and you know, increasing and raising, however you want to say it. So all that together takes the whole I'm exercising to be fit, but more or less the same thing you do if you sat down and watched TV, something that's enjoyable. So if you make it enjoyable, it'll be something that is not just, you know, an exercise, something that you have to do to lose weight, but something that you enjoy doing that you'll go back to doing and make sure that you fit into your life. Because it's just a matter of, because people make excuses that they don't have time. So it's a matter of trying to fit it in and wanting to fit it in.
That's such a good point, because you don't want exercise to add stress to your life. Stress reliever. And if it's something like you're dreading doing it at the end of the day and you're thinking about a million other things you'd enjoy doing, well, then that's something that's not really going to be beneficial. It's adding anxiety to your life. But you made a great point, the social aspect. You know, that's a whole other, you know, that's a game changer for some people. It's not just exercising. It's spending time catching up with a friend, you know, killing two birds with one stone. That's great.
That's so true. And as, you know, I can attest, Michelle, as you mentioned, a way to get to know people and just socializing. Well, you know, I'm out quite a bit and we're walking, because it's more convenient to walk than it is to drive in certain areas, and especially if you're going to the West End, which is, you know, more of the concentrated city of London. And, you know, we're walking in a group, and by the time you realize, you know, you've really walked quite a bit, and especially if it's not rainy or the weather is nice. So it's enjoyable, and you know, you're talking as you go along. So I can really, really relate to that. And that's something in Atlanta, because usually when you leave home, unless you're involved in or disciplined in running or even getting out and walking quite a bit, you know, you leave home with a destination in mind, and the first thing is to get in the vehicle and drive. Now, another incentive for people here that, you know, I've asked, they said, you know, I have a car, but petrol, which is gasoline, is very expensive. So
yeah,
they only drive when they have to. Or if they're driving, they said sometimes you know, there's so much traffic, and the public transportation is really centrally located here. It, you know, so it, I said it's easier to jump on the bus or take the, you know, the underground, which is what, the subway. And you know, so it again, Michelle, you're so right, because it, people become disciplined, and you know, they set priorities, and they don't know any other way. They just know, you know, they do what they have to save, get money, which saves on gas. And I think if you calculate the differences, I think a gallon of gas here, it's about $11. Can you imagine?
That's crazy.
You know, it's not sold in gallons per se. They, you know, they do it in the liters, but it works out to be about, I think, $10, $11. So that's a great incentive. Can you imagine if we had $10 gas prices? My God. Michelle, a lot more people would be walking, right?
Yeah, I mean, California is expensive as well. So, and in California, most of those people are nature-bound. They're out riding their bikes, skateboards, you know. So, it, like I said, it all depends on the city, state that you live in that helps promote that type of, out, you know, that living for you. And unfortunately, like I said, in the South, they're trying, but we're not there yet.
True.
Yeah, I find there in certain cities there's social programs kind of popping up that incentivize, you know, riding your bike. I remember I lived in New Haven, Connecticut for a period of time, and it was like ride your bike to work day once a month, and people that did that would get some kind of bonus or some kind of incentive, either monetarily or maybe they, you know, met up and had like a party afterwards or something. But it was a great thing. And, you know, I'd love to see that in cities, for example, like Atlanta, that don't have public transportation. I know New Haven really didn't. I mean, they had some kind of bus system, but it wasn't extensive. So, no, you need, people need an incentive to make a change. And it would be great if we had more programs that provided that.
That would be great. And Michelle, just coming back to what you're doing with I Run Against Diabetes, not only are you running, walking, or jogging for a cause, but it's also an opportunity for people to get out of the house now that the weather is getting nice. And I heard you guys have fairly nice weather there today, unlike the rainy weather here today, but everything gives thanks. But, you know, so it's a great way for people to get out and start, you know, running and networking. Never know, you know, you want to expand your business, or just not necessarily your business, but, you know, just expand, you know, start meeting people. It's a great way. So Michelle, tell us a little about what you're doing in June and how people can get involved. And I know you have an actual location in Johns Creek in the Atlanta area, that if people don't want to run on their own, then they could actually come out and join you. So just share with us a little bit more about that.
Okay, yes. It's, it started off as a virtual event. So I won't say it's a race, because you're pretty much on your own to record your own time and start when you want to and finish when you want to. But I just want to build awareness to I Run Against Diabetes and also the cause that we're trying to raise money for, which is, you know, from children with diabetes, adult with diabetes, to dogs that assist people with diabetes. I mean, there's so many aspects to this disease, and it needs funding and help. I just want to raise awareness to this. So this is the initial event to kick that off. The cost of it is $10, and you can choose between a 5K, 10K, or a half marathon. We're going to have an actual location. It's not an official race, like I said. So it's an event where you could come like a run club and run with other people that are participating in this event on that weekend, which is June 22nd. So the event runs from June 21st through June 24th. So you have 4 days in which to complete your mileage. So if you're new to all of this, and you're just starting and you just want to do a half a mile a day, or start in the morning, finish in the evening, you have 4 days in which to complete it, so you don't have that pressure of having to do it in a certain amount of time if you actually went to a race. And then the event on June 22nd, you can run or walk, jog, any of those distances. From adults to kids, they can come out, and we'll be at Lifetime Fitness, and that's in Johns Creek, GA. The address for that is 11555 John Street Parkway, and we're starting at 7 a.m. And June will be, it'll be nice and toasty here, so you want to start as early as possible. If others want to come out a little bit earlier and start earlier, that's fine as well. Again, it's nothing mandatory, and it's totally up to you, but I will have your medals on site. So everyone who registers does receive a finisher's medal as an accomplishment of taking part in this event and helping to bring awareness to this disease. And then what else? We have other events planned throughout the at the end of the year and next year as well to bridge that gap in the running community, because there aren't many running events that raise funds for diabetes. There are walking events, but not running events. And I'm not I don't completely understand the whole concept of why a lot of those were taken away, because I think they did have them initially. But I'm working with the American Diabetes Association and Juvenile Diabetes and so on and so forth to try and put more events out there so that we can help bridge that gap. And also, I have a group that meets on Tuesday evenings at Lifetime in Johns Creek as well in Georgia. We start at 6:30 p.m., and we do from anything from 1 to 6 miles. We're usually outside for about an hour. But, you know, people come and they don't know each other, and they create friends, and they call each other and make sure they're coming that Tuesday, and they run walk with each other. So, you know, it's a means to make those friends. So even if you come by yourself, you know, it doesn't mean that you won't meet someone that you could connect with and do future events or daily exercise with. So it's definitely a means to socially connect with the community. So I really hope that a lot of people would sign up for the event and encourage their family members to sign up and take part and help bring awareness to diabetes.
That's such so awesome. And I'm not just myself, but I think other members have signed up, so we will be getting our medal. This is awesome. And again, you can run, jog, or walk. And so, yeah, in June, that should really be nice. And while I'm here, Michelle, I am spreading the word, and hopefully we'll have an international run, walk or jog, which I don't think will be that difficult because people are already used to walking, and that would really be awesome. Kimberly.
Yes.
Are you signed up?
I'm not signed up yet. I need to sign up. I'm in the process of moving, but I think by the time the run starts, I'll be settled into my new place. I'm moving to Chicago, so I will be more than happy to do the run. I'm actually going to get my roommate to do it, too, so
awesome.
It's going to be good. Yeah.
Awesome. So Michelle, you've started something that it's a great epidemic to have, actually, encouraging, you know, others to be physically fit. Doing that myself is, you know, pretty, but I'm getting enough practice here, trust me, because you're walking quite a bit. But we're going to take a short break, and we will be back in 1 minute.
Welcome to Healthy Explosions Global Holistic Online Nutrition Training and Coaching Programs, the ultimate in individual health and wellness empowerment, offering state-of-the-art virtual classrooms with live instructor-led course experiences, individual and group programs, and CEU-approved courses. No travel, no stress, no hassle. Available from any location. Ideal for employee wellness program with tried, tested, and proven results. If you are ready to take control of your health, understand nutrition for your individual needs, understand your lab test results, and the signals to determine imbalances within your body, as well as the art of eating for good digestive health, then this program is for you. So, take your health to the next level. Sign up for one of our courses today. Still not convinced? Request a free 30-minute Skype consultation with a specialist or email programs@healthyexplosion.com.
Welcome back to the Healthy Explosion Show. I'm your host, Martina Degut, broadcasting today all the way from London, England.
and joining Kimberly, Britt, my co-host, and I are Michelle Black of I Run Against Diabetes. Welcome back, Kimberly. Welcome back, Michelle.
Thank you.
Okay, one of the things that I've noticed here is that there happened to be a very large problem, you know, of diabetes, and which is really interesting because I was saying that you don't see the rate of obesity that you do, say, in the southern states as you do here. You don't see the type of obesity here as you do in the southern states. But still, there's the problem with diabetes. And diabetes, just showing, you know, stating that you don't have to be overweight to actually have diabetes. So obviously, there's a problem here. And today I was passing by a church, and a local church, and they were actually holding it's a health day, and one of the key focus was diabetes, you know, diabetes prevention. So, Michelle, this, you know, think global, because, again, the problem with diabetes is it's really growing, and with almost 400 million people worldwide with diabetes, there's just a lot of awareness that needs to happen. And, you know, it's been proven that exercise is a great way of helping to combat diabetes. Michelle, in your journey, since you began this journey with I Run Against Diabetes, what are some of the, is there anything surprising that you've come across in terms of, you know, just talking to people with diabetes in terms of their lack of knowledge? And even
I did notice surprising, especially with the group that I started on Tuesday, is that people know they have diabetes, and it's like, well, I guess I should start doing something about it. So it's like the people who have it and know they have it don't take it seriously. So I found that very shocking, and I've had that, you know, quite often come up. So I don't know what that is, why,
wow.
You know, I guess because they still move around and do what they want to, that they don't take it seriously, but I still don't understand that. So hopefully we can reach those and find something so that they can understand and take care of what they have going on now, because it'll just get worse. And, you know, things that could end up is like loss of vision and loss of limbs and you know, a bunch of other things. So I just found that very interesting that, you know, there's several people that have the disease, know they have the disease, but choose to do nothing about it. So that was interesting.
That's incredible. Yeah. And it seems like it's like almost a whole new set of problems when so many people have a disease that it almost becomes like, oh, too common to even be that worried about. It's like, oh, everybody has that, you know, what's the big deal? But it is a huge deal. And like you said, it can cause everything from loss of vision to loss of limbs and, you know, anything in between. Like, you can't be overwhelmed by the fact that so many people have it, therefore it's not a big deal. It is a big deal.
Most definitely. And I, you know, it's a mindset. A lot of times people, they're aware of, it's like, eating something, you know, it's not good for you, but you do it anyway. But the sad thing is that, you know, with something like diabetes, the outcomes could be, you know, fatal. And even if you don't end up, you know, dying from the disease, but just, you know, interfering and interrupting your quality of life, that should be something to light a fire under, you know, on us to move and do something, you know, even start by just getting out walking. You know, and there's a lot of people, and the stats is just based on people who have actually been tested for diabetes. There's so many people that are, they call them pre-diabetes, you
right.
know, and you want to catch those people before it becomes full-blown diabetes, where they're, you know, have the opportunity to, you know, to even reverse what ultimately could happen if they don't do anything about it. So awareness, there's, you know, that's a very big part of it. But then, you know, we have to do our part as well. I think it's up to the individual, as you said, Michelle and Kimberly, that, you know, it's individual accountability, because you can't make someone do anything. You could just, there's an old saying, you could lead a horse to water, but you can't make the horse drink.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing, you know, with the awareness that I Run Against Diabetes is doing, and running community. And, you know, you have so many different organizations that are actually actively, you know, trying to bring, you know, the issue of diabetes to the forefront through various types of awareness programs in, you know, different form. We've got to get, you know, beyond that somehow to start reducing the numbers instead of them growing. And that's a big question. How do we reduce the numbers? You know, the number of people that are on diet, even if it could remain, you know, the same and start decreasing, but rather than increasing, because have you noticed that a lot of lifestyle illnesses and diseases, they're on the rise and not reducing? I mean, in some areas maybe, but overall, and right now I'm talking about the U.S., you know, it's a big problem. So, any ideas? How do we? You know, there's education, there's awareness, but then there's the individual accountability. How do we get people to change?
Well, especially in the South, I think because this is the Bible Belt, start in the churches, because a lot of times I've, you know, because I'm Catholic, but I've gone to several churches and you'll see the priests or the pastors that are way overweight. And you have to lead by example, and your body is your temple. So if we can probably make and start in the churches to make sure push that aspect. And, you know, I know there's certain faiths that really concentrate on what they eat and so forth, because that's like taking a child to school to learn and you know, grow and so forth. You learn by example. And then the next place of definitely in the workplaces to make sure that they're offering, if they have places for people to eat, healthier choices, or like if they do celebrations, instead of having cake, having food, or doing something like a virtual run or a run that's not actually a race, twice a year or something that their employees can get involved in, but making that a part of, you know, awareness in those large aspects, because that in the South, definitely, that's pretty much for an adult, that's, you know, where they spend their time. So that would be my vote to start in those places and to make sure that, you know, constant awareness is being brought to participants or, you know, people in that social arena so that it's always in their face. And then eventually, hopefully, they'll catch on and want to bite that bullet and start doing something about it. You tend to do what you stay around. So when I first started working out, I had my friends that we went out to eat and drink and so forth, because that's what you did in the South. When I started to work out, I literally don't really have those friends anymore. And it's not like I don't want to be friends with them, but it's I'm doing something different and they weren't ready for that change. So you tend to spend more time with people that are wanting to do that because that's your interest.
I think a lot of times, too, that is a good point. I mean, you can't make a change unless you want to make a change. But with diabetes in particular, I think a lot of times the problem starts from the top. I say that about a lot of things. But, I mean, if you look at the food recommendations that were being given by some of the leading governmental bodies in this country, they're kind of off course in terms of actually fostering health. And I don't need to name anything specifically, but let's be honest. If you know anything about diabetes, diabetes is caused by insulin, by hormonal issues due to insulin resistance, for example. And we've proven that things like wheat and certain grains can spike your insulin, and that causes that eventual continual spike will cause the resistance problem leading to diabetes. But here we have recommendations of getting 6 to 12 servings of grains, including whole wheat and gluten and things like that, a day. So if you're being told one thing, but it's really actually making you sick, if you're following that advice, what are you supposed to do, you know? And it kind of takes like the rogue nutritionist and the kind of high, you know, alternative healer to kind of actually give the better nutritional advice, it seems, at least in my experience. I mean, I know a lot of doctors, they're not even, you know, bless their hearts, but they're not even schooled in proper nutrition and how to actually prevent diabetes, much more likely to give a drug, which unfortunately it's just, they haven't shown successful in treating diabetes. I mean, the only true successes we find in actually reversing and getting rid of the disease and, you know, obviously fully preventing it is through a lifestyle change, including nutrition and exercise. But I think even getting back to the show topic that we're kind of dealing with this mind-body exercise and the connection is, you made a great point, Michelle. You have to want to make a change. And if you're better in tune with your body and how you're feeling, then you're going to want to put things in your body that are going to foster better health. I think in today's world of just working so many hours and being constantly bombarded through our technology and things like that, you lose touch with how you're actually feeling. You lose touch with, I really don't feel so good after I eat that. But you just keep eating it anyways because you're not even listening to your body anymore. So I think, like you just said, exercise is a great point or is a great way in order to get back in tune with your body. It's been proven that individuals, for example, that participate in something like yoga, they're 10 times less likely to have issues with overeating. They're also less likely to have issues with eating disorders, which can include binge eating. It can also include anorexia. But, I mean, it's been proven to actually be more effective than traditional treatments for those kinds of eating disorders. So that kind of underscores the point I'm trying to make, which is if your mind is in line with health and you're in line with trying to actually foster that health, you've made the decision on your own and you have the information to do so. That's the only true way to prevent and kind of reverse this increasing trend towards diabetes and other diseases that we're finding today.
That's so true. And a good point. You've both made such great points. But Michelle, just piggybacking on what you said about the church, you're absolutely correct. The South is the Bible Belt, and there's more obesity in the church than outside the church. And you're right; it should be leading by example. And so, yes. Have to be more awareness on where people tend to spend the most time, and also in the workplace. You know, instead of sending out for pizza all the time, or you know, cakes every birthday, especially in companies, you'll see. You know, it's and they're always birthdays. So sometimes in a month you could see it could be five or six different birthdays. So they're bringing in cakes and, you know, sodas and ice cream. And then because people don't want to feel as though they're being antisocial, they tend to join in. And it's, again, you're right, Michelle, it's an association, you know. Okay, well, maybe I'll just have this little piece and then it turns out to be another piece and another piece. So it's going back to, number one, leading by example. Number two is the individual accountability, which employers, especially with the rising cost of health care, should really want to encourage their employees and themselves, you know, in becoming more and more healthy by access to exercise and nutrition. And then we also have this program, you know, the Healthy Explosion Global Training, which will teach you about your body, because I think people, too, make poor choices because they don't understand fully how the body functions. So that's, you know, the way of really getting the education that you need. You need to be physically fit, so you need to do some type of exercise. One thing I want to get in, Michelle, before we end the show, is very important, and I know you mentioned it the last time you were on the show, but don't just start running with the shoe that you have. Can you enlighten us on why it's important to have the right type of shoe?
Absolutely. I mean, people who just start out, it could be a make or break. Because if it's really strenuous and you feel it, you know, whatever your body goes through, you're not going to want to do it. Like was said, if you have the stress of having to exercise, you're not going to want to exercise. But running, biking, swimming, these are all cardiovascular intensive exercises. So, of course, you have to, you know, speak with your doctor. But when it comes to running, you have to have the proper shoe. Because some people's feet turn outward, some people's feet turn inward, some people's, you know, have shin problems, some people have had a knee replacement. Whatever your condition is, you have to find a shoe that's comfortable. And that's regular walking shoes, just your regular, you know, they see heels are bad for your body. You have to put the proper shoes on your body because that's your foundation, your feet, your legs, that's your foundation to your whole body. So you have to make sure that you take care of that because if you put the wrong shoes on, you can mess up your back, your shoulders, whatever. So there's several places that could fit you for the proper shoe, and what they'll do is take a recording or watch you run, walk, or jog, whatever it is, and then be able to tell you what type of pronator, and that means, you know, your foot turns to whatever angle, and, you know, prescribe pretty much a series of shoes, and then you find which one out of that series based on your type of pronation works best for you. And those type of, in the South, we have Big Peach, we have Fleet Feet. I was in Jersey, they have, you know, but you want to go to a store that specializes in running to do that. I mean, yes, Dick sells them in sports bazaars, but they're not going to take the time because that's not what they specialize in to make sure that you are in the proper shoe. So you want to go to an actual store that specializes in running and so forth. And if you're doing biking, it's a store that specializes in biking because you want to make sure that you're fitted properly. I mean, just an example, I mean, this is about running, but just as an example, I was riding my bike and I didn't understand the concept of getting fitted for a bike. I'm like, what is that? So I said, I'll just raise my own bike seat. I did that, but it was crooked. So I went on a 60-mile bike ride. It ate into my glute muscle. And it took me 2 months of going to a chiropractor to recover, where I could have paid $60 to get fitted for the bike. So it's
wow.
Like, yeah, you either do it properly or you don't do it properly and pay additional at the end. So it's really important that you do all of those things. So, yes, you need to get fitted for your shoes. You need to get fitted for your bike. You really need to, you don't just go out and do these things because you could really hurt yourself.
So true, and your health is your wealth. We need to live it well. So, you know, that's very, very, very important. Now, you also mentioned before that each shoe that you buy and you wear for running, it usually wears out after a certain number of miles. Is it? How many miles is that? How many?
Just for a car tire, because you have the treading at the bottom of a shoe. Depending on if you run heavy or light, it's about 250 to 300 miles. So you should have some type of gadget or something to be able to record how many miles you're putting on your shoes because it may be you could still wear that shoe in the gym to work out, but you shouldn't wear that for running.
Good point. Very, very good point. Did you know that, Kimberly?
I didn't know that specifically, but I've heard my mom actually got her feet fit for shoes, and that really helped some back problems she was having. So I was familiar with the concept of it.
Okay. But, yeah, so, and there's a lot of people, yeah, because they'll just start out, I think I'll go jogging, and they'll wear whatever gear they have, and rarely people will go out and say, I'm going to start running, I need the right shoes. But usually if you have sneakers, let's face it, you put on your sneakers and you start running and walking, whereas, you know, doing something like that, you could end up injuring yourself. And then once you have a bad experience, you're not going to want to continue. So it is very, very important. I wanted you to bring that up.
Welcome to Healthy Explosions Global Holistic Online Nutrition Training and Coaching Programs, the ultimate in individual health and wellness empowerment. Offerings.
Okay. I have no idea how that happened. Hello?
Oh, I thought it was. That was our cue to go.
I think I'm talking, and actually my eyes were closed, and I must have somehow accidentally hit that. No. Okay. All right. What were we saying? It's almost time to go, but not yet. I think I was saying, that kind of startled me, how important it is to have the right shoe, the right, you know, the right gears. That's very, very important. Any other tips that you can give the audience, Michelle, about, you know, mind-body exercise or just working out?
Yeah, I want to touch on this. It's, okay, being fit does not just mean running. And we've been talking about that, or biking. There's five components for physical fitness, and you should, and just having one or two is not enough. So there's the cardiovascular endurance, which you get from running, biking, swimming, and anything else that will get your heart rate up. Then there's the muscular strength, which most men tend to have, so if they can lift every weight in the gym, they feel, I'm like, I'm fit. But that does not make you fit, because a lot of them cannot run. Then it's the muscular endurance, so it's being able to do that same exercise over and over and over again. And then there's the flexibility aspect. You know, a lot of bodybuilders can barely turn around or cross their legs or any, you know, you really, that's where the yoga and all of that comes into it. And then it's your body composition, what comes with diet. So, you know, you have the pear shape, the round shape, and all that other stuff. That's the fat content. So you need to be aware of your BMI. So your body mass index, and you know how much fat that you're carrying. So those are the five components that make up fitness, and we really can't pick and choose which ones we want to be like, oh, I'll do that. Yeah, I'm strong. I can lift up everything. I don't need all the other stuff. You really need a little of all of the components. So I just wanted to make sure to touch on that.
That's a great point, actually. I think the strength training is often lost on the female crowd, and it's a huge issue because I think women are afraid of getting bulky, and that's why they lean more towards cardiovascular. But I know for me, I primarily moved into a weight training routine, and that's really when I was able to actually see a lot more of toning up in my body than I ever was through just cardiovascular work alone. And I looked pretty heavy, and I don't consider myself to be a bulky person at all. I think a lot of women need to lose that fear of lifting weights, because actually lifting weights is what's going to strengthen your bone in the long run. I mean, that's what's going to help prevent osteoporosis and all these other things. It's strengthening those tendons, that tendon to hold onto your bones, and getting your bones denser and getting that weight-bearing ability, because we lose that, especially as women, as we age. So I think that's a great point, is you do need, you can't just go out there and do one thing forever. Your body's going to get used to it, and it's not going to be a challenge. You've got to always be switching it up and include those different aspects like you mentioned.
That's true. The flexibility is so key. And when you again, when you have a strong core, you can prevent so many problems, even falling. A lot of times people break bones, especially women, from falling. But with when you have a strong core, then even if you fall, not saying that you may not break something, not saying that at all, but the likelihood of you doing that is reduced just because those core muscles are strengthened. So yeah, that's key. We are almost at the end. Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show with us today. Can you see that your website, irunagainstdiabetes.com, correct?
Yes, www.irunagainstdiabetes.com. We're up and ready to take registrations, donations for American Diabetes Association. We just had an article published in Gwinnett, Sports Gwinnett, and a link to that's on the site. We have lots of news. This month we have prize giveaways, a restaurant gift certificate. We got a lot of fun things going on, so please check us out.
And don't forget to sign up, again, because no matter what your level of physical fitness, walk, run, jog,
crawl.
Just get involved. That's I was thinking that too, crawl. It doesn't matter what your level of fitness. The thing is to keep moving and stay active. And it helps the mind. And it's true. It builds the, it really increases the endorphins in the brain. And it's addicting. So the key thing is just to get started. We're just about out of time. As a matter of fact, I have less time today because it's just about 4 o'clock here in the UK, and I know you just not even at noon yet. Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
And we're going to see if we can get some people signed up here in the UK. That would be awesome. Then it would be a total global virtual run.
Definitely, yes.
Awesome. Well, I am your host, Martina De Goot. Joining us today is Michelle Black of I Run Against Diabetes. And I guess it really is time to go. Can you hear the clock in the background signifying it's on the hour? And Kimberly, thank you again for having me today. And until next time, you have a great week. And again, don't forget to join us next Saturday at the same time. Have a great evening, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into the Healthy Explosion Show, your best source for holistic health. Join us on Saturdays live at 10 a.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Visit HealthyExplosionShow.com for information about the show, listen to archive shows, read our online newsletter, visit the Marketplace section for holistic products and services, and advertise your products and services. Don't forget to follow Healthy Explosion Show on Twitter and Facebook. Those are